Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Welcome back, genies, to Extreme Genes, Family History Radio, where we shake your family trees and watch the nuts fall. I am your radio root sleuth, Fisher, and we've got some great stuff on the show today. First, in about 10 minutes, we will be joined by Karen Zock. She is a longtime researcher in Indiana who also happens to oversee two County Gen websites. Now, if you don't know what they are, Karen will be here to tell you all about them. Gen websites are all over the place and just may be what you're looking for to break down that wall or discover some unknown stories in your family history. I've found many over the years there. Oh, and as she'll remind you, they don't cost you a dime. Then later in the show, a great call we first aired in 2013 from a lady in Michigan who learned a few things here and went to work. And wait till you hear the cool stuff she found about her Revolutionary War era people. It is one of my favorite calls we've ever had. If you have a story you'd like to share, we're always looking forward to hearing from you. Our toll-free Extreme Genes find line is 1-234-56-GENES. That's 1-234-56-GENES, G-E-N-E-S. If you forget it, just go to extremegenes.com. And of course, later in the show, our preservation authority, Tom Perry, returns with great advice on preserving your family treasures, photos, slides, videos, home movies, you name it. Today, he's got great tips on questions about color correction for your home movies and converting your videos at home. As always, the man knows what he is talking about. It is time once again for your family histoire news from the pages of extremegenes.com, where you can find links to most all the stories we talk about. Just think of it as a Drudge Report for family history news and success stories. Next up, a Delaware man recently died and in so doing surprised his family as they learned that he had written his own obituary. And here's some of what he had to say. Walter George Brule Jr. of Newark and Dewey Beach is a dead person. He is no more. He is bereft of life. He is deceased. He has rung down the curtain and gone to join the choir invisible. He has expired and gone to meet his maker. And this thing just keeps getting better. Walter wrote, "There will be no viewing since his wife refuses to honor his request to have him standing in the corner of the room with a glass of Jack Daniels in his hand so he would appear natural to visitors. His ashes," he wrote, "are to be kept in an urn until they get tired of having it around. What's a Grecian urn? Oh, about 200 drachmas a week." Walt was preceded in death by his tonsils and adenoids in 1935, a spinal disc in 1974, a large piece of his thyroid gland in 1988, and his prostate on March 27, 2000. He is survived by his wife of 57 years, the former Helene Sellers, who will, quote, "now be able to purchase the mink coat, which he had always refused her because he believed only minks should wear mink." Don't you wish everybody could write their own obituary this way? Walter Brule got a lot of attention over this, and what a way to go out. Find the link to the story at extremegenes.com. Next up, they are the most hated baby names in America. Every year, of course, the Social Security people reveal the most common baby names for both boys and girls. Well, as it turns out, many of those names also appear on the list of most reviled baby names. Basically, it's because whatever becomes popular also has a backlash associated with it. You know, think New York Yankees. The number one most hated baby name of the past year is a girl's name, Neva, which is heaven spelled backwards. It was a name that wasn't even around in the 1990s, then shot up to number 31, most popular in the middle of the last decade, whatever we call that decade. Following Neva on the girls' list are Destiny, Madison, Mackenzie, McKenna, Addison, Gertrude, Caitlin, Michaela, and Bertha. Bertha. I had no idea that had made such a comeback, even to be the number 10 most hated girl's name. On the boys' list we have, and you can see a pattern in this, Jaden, Braden, Aiden, Caden, Hunter, Hayden, Bentley, Tristan, Michael, and Jackson. Yes, Jaden, Braden, Aiden, Caden, and Hayden are all on the list. It's kind of like the cheerleading squad when I was in high school. Candy, Mandy, Sandy, Randy, and Brandy. And they all wrote their names with a little heart over the eye. They weren't very popular either. And that is your family histoire news for this week. And coming up next, she's an Indiana Hoosier who may have been gathering your ancestors' records for her gen websites for years. What is a gen website? Well, if you don't know, and a lot of people don't, Karen Zock of Montgomery County, Indiana, will tell you about it coming up in 3 minutes on Extreme Genes Family History Radio at ExtremeGenes.com. And welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth. And our guest today is somebody I met back when I don't think I could even grow a mustache. Karen Zock from Montgomery County, Indiana, a dear friend who actually I met when we were moving around the country back in the day, my wife and I. How are you, Karen? Good to talk to you again.
I am good. Good to talk to you also.
And Karen was a person who helped us with my wife's lineage back in the day as we were just getting started. And now she runs a couple of sites, which we call Gen websites. And for people who are unfamiliar with these things, I think sometimes those who are a little more experienced tend to never mention them. And then when people hear about them, they go, well, what's a Gen website? And these are kind of important for anybody doing research. And Karen, you run two of them. So first of all, let's describe to people, what is a Gen website?
Well, a Gen website is a site with genealogy on it. And the best part about it is it's free.
Yes, it's free. And it's local for the area that you're looking in.
Exactly. Like, I live in Montgomery County, so I do the Montgomery County Gen Web page.
Exactly.
Some of them do live other places, but they at least have family members in that area.
Well, that's true. But you handle also the one for Fountain County, Indiana, so you don't have to live there to be the coordinator for that particular Gen website.
That's true.
Now, Gen websites are created for every state in the country and every county in every state, plus the United States itself has one. And so there are volunteers at all these different levels. How long have you been doing your Gen website, Karen?
Well, I've been doing it since the inception of Indiana's Gen website. I've stuck with that one. I traded off some other ones, and I've had Fountain County for several years. I started Park and had it for several years, and I co-sponsored the one in Putnam County. So it's kind of the ones around me is the one I'm interested in.
Right, and these are areas that your people have come from.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. So do you have a staff of volunteers that work with you? How many do you have, and what do they do?
Well, I do. I have a big group. I have probably a dozen who help me, and they type obituaries or send in pictures, just anything I kind of needed doing. One of the recent things that some of my volunteers did was I had started trying to find all the towns in our county. I found 100 to begin with. And then my daughter Susie and some friends, Jerry, Bill, and Deli, they decided they wanted to kind of have a little running contest to see how many more they could find. And you're not going to believe this, but we now have 322 towns that have been in our county at one time.
Wow. In your county.
It's amazing.
That is, well, and see, this is all such important stuff because those political subdivisions can make such a difference when you're researching and trying to figure out who lived where, because the town names aren't always the name of the township, so it gets very complicated. When you started doing this several years ago, how long have they been around now? About 10, 15 years?
Oh, no, they began in 1996.
So a little longer than that, then.
Close to 20, yeah.
Yeah, almost 20 years now.
Yeah.
And so I guess the question would be, where was it when you started, and where is it now, would you say?
My site's just triple-fold, probably more than that. And the thing with GenWeb is each county coordinator does what they can do, I guess I'd say. And I spend about 6 hours a day on mine, uploading photos and yearbooks and obituaries, marriages, and that stuff. And some might only spend 6 hours a month. So it just kind of depends.
Right. Well, and there are thousands of counties out there, and each one seems to have a different look, a different feel, a different amount of usability. And that's important for people to know that, gee, you may go to Karen's and go, wow, look at all this stuff for Montgomery County, Indiana. And then you might go to some place in Vermont and it's like, yeah, not so much.
Not so much, yeah. That's just it in a nutshell. But if you happen to hit a biggie, like I have one in northern Indiana that I've spent weeks and weeks on, and I won't go for a while, and then she's added more, and I can spend some more days on it. So it just depends on the coordinator.
How are Gen websites funded?
Well,
they're not government sites, right?
No. They're just a bunch of coordinators, and some of them pay for their own site. I have a friend. Well, there's about five of us on the one that I do, the user we use. There's about five of us, and one of them, it's not that much a year, and she said, I'll just pay for it. And, you know, she does the background work for it. And then there's also a lot of them in Indiana who pay like $5 a year to the state coordinator, and then she gets one. So it kind of depends on each state and each county how they want to work it.
So really the only cost is probably just the website itself, pretty much, right?
Yes, exactly.
And how deep you want to go with that. And so you've got not only volunteers, but you also have people who want to contribute a little bit to it. And it doesn't need a whole lot, which is what makes it so fantastic. So,
and it's free.
And it's free. Did you mention that before? We're talking to Karen Zock. She's a coordinator for two Gen websites back in Indiana and has been doing this for so long. And for so many people, this is a real revelation to know that there is a site for every county. Do you know how many there are altogether? Have you ever figured that out?
No, but it wouldn't be too hard. Just take each state and see how many counties. Like Indiana has 92, so we have 92 sites.
Right.
Plus the state one, yeah.
Yeah, so there are literally thousands of them out there, you know, when you include state, the country, and the individual counties. And actually, some of the large urban areas have their own Gen websites as well.
True.
So you also have some city ones that are available. So it's great stuff. What has been the biggest revelation to you about your site that you've, as a result of all your efforts there?
I think it's been interesting to watch how some of the things are unique, but others I've abandoned. For instance, the cemeteries, because there's findagrave.com. Our local library also has all the cemeteries online, and I began putting them online, and I said, well, I'm really kind of wasting my time here.
Yeah, right. It's a duplication of effort. Sure, and
exactly.
BillionGraves.com has come along as well.
Exactly. I've used that a few times, too.
Yeah, you take that and you say, okay, I don't need to do cemeteries anymore. But you must have also found some records that you probably had no idea even existed in your area as a result of this.
One of the things I was hoping you'd ask me. I have a lot of unique things. I have over 100 Bibles from the area.
Wow.
We have lots of yearbooks. And one of the neatest things I think we have on there is a barber in my little hometown. He was a barber for over 40 years here and kept a diary each year. And we only have about 15 of them because the other ones, well, they were lost. I won't tell you how. It's sad. But the ones I have, I would put it up on the Montgomery County Roots Web listserv, and it just was the neatest thing. We all would laugh about things that he had said and things that he talked about. And each day he would put how much money he made that day. And he also had four or five slide lines, too, that he'd talk about, like he sold magazines and he sold stoves.
Does he talk about some of his customers?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So a lot of names, a lot of Montgomery County names show up in this.
Definitely. On Thursday, March 6th, 130 years ago, this is what he wrote. $4.65 made. I sent a dollar to the Globe Democrat. Tonight we had the Grand Master Workman of the AOUW of the state to talk with us, or to us in the lodge room tonight. I paid 80 cents for a sack of flour. We prefer the Peerless brand.
Wow, talk about specific.
Isn't that a neat entry?
Yeah, it is, because it really gives you a little insight into their lives and how they lived back then.
Oh, yeah. There is one every day for, I think, 15 years.
Wow. That is so much fun. What are some of the other unusual sources that you found as a result of the effort of yourself and the volunteers?
I have a lot of fun links, like an acronym thing, because you run across in an obituary that they belong to the KOWE or whatever, and I have an acronym list that a friend gave me. I thought that was really helpful.
Yeah, that is helpful.
Yes, and I have a link to the Basketball Hall of Fame because Indiana, who's big in the basketball.
So, and it just goes to show that basically every Gen website is unique to its locale, and so if you're researching an area, it's a great place to go.
It is indeed. And one of my fun ones is the family recipes. I began it with some recipes from our family, and I'd explain where I got it and how the taste was and all this stuff. And then I've had a lot of people contribute to that, too, with their own family recipes. And I don't think there are very many that have recipes on them, but it's kind of fun.
That, well, out of the thousands, you never know.
Exactly.
All right. Karen Zock, thank you so much for your time. It's been a lot of fun and an education, I know, for a lot of people to learn about Gen websites and how they can help you in your research.
Yes, and they can indeed. And I hope you all get right on there and use them.
And by the way, if you want to find a Gen website for a particular county, they are easy to find. Just search the name of the county with the name of the state and add the word GenWeb. It'll be the first thing to come up or close to it. And again, they're not all the same, so hopefully you'll get one with some real useful information on it. And good luck. Coming up next, it's one of my favorite classic calls from a listener in Michigan and an exciting Revolutionary War discovery she made in her own lines. Hear Robbie's story in 5 minutes on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. Welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. Fisher here, and we're always asking you to call our toll-free Extreme Genes find line, 1-2-3-4-5-6-GENES, to share your stories. I think some people hesitate to call it because they think others who aren't related won't be interested in what they have to share. Well, last fall, a listener from Michigan proved that's just not the case. She'd been following the show from the beginning and picked up a few tips that helped her to find some information she had no idea even existed concerning a close family member. She then looked into another line that she struggled with and found some fascinating information on a Revolutionary War soldier. Once again, here's my conversation with Robbie from Michigan. Where are you in Michigan, Robbie?
I'm in Northville, Michigan, a Detroit suburb.
Excellent. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Thank you. I saw your piece on digitized newspapers. I learned a lot from it, and it led me to all kinds of things. I found things about my husband's family, my family. I've been surprising all my relatives with newspaper articles about them.
Isn't that the greatest stuff? Isn't that the most? It's a revelation, isn't it?
It is, and it's so exciting to find it and have it pop up on the screen.
Okay, I want to ask, what services did you use to find this stuff? Because there are many of them. Some are free. What did you have?
Chronicling America.
Right, and that's free from Library of Congress. Yep.
Uh-huh. And I searched Illinois digitized newspapers, came up with all kinds of things from the University of Illinois.
Wonderful.
And I also have been on newspapers.com.
Okay, great. And that's a subscription site.
It is.
And so you just give us a story or two of what you found.
Well, I found where my father-in-law was in a homecoming court in high school, and he hadn't told anyone about that.
Aha! Uh-huh. Have you laid that on him yet?
Yes, he loved it. He said he had forgotten about it. So, lots of good things to do with the newspapers, but I've also been learning a lot about from your site about finding my ancestors, and I found a good one.
Okay, fill us in.
Can I tell you about him?
Yes.
Okay, his name is William Wedgbar Underwood.
Boy, there's a name. Okay.
Well, that's just one of his names. He has several aliases. He goes by Wedgbar, Wedgebear, Wedgegear, all kinds of things. And we think it's because he didn't read or write. He signed his name with an X.
Right.
So whenever he told someone his name, they interpreted it.
Right. Now, what era are we talking about? When did he live? And
Revolutionary
where?
Revolutionary War.
Revolutionary War period, and what state?
He was born in Virginia. He lived in North Carolina and in Georgia.
Okay. And you found him, and what is his relationship to you?
He is my 5-great-grandfather.
So he's one of, I want to say...
7 generations back.
Yeah, 7 generations back, so it's like one of 64 or something like that. Maybe 128, I don't know. I'll have to figure it out.
So, I'll let you do that, Matt. Yeah.
It's a small piece, but nonetheless, this is awesome. So what did you learn about him?
It's just the hunt has been just phenomenal. I always knew I had a 4-great-grandfather, Jesse Underwood, who was a Baptist preacher.
Okay.
And my grandma Maggie used to tell me stories about him. He moved from North Carolina with his wife to the Bald Knob region of southern Illinois, where my folks came from. And every year there are reunions celebrating Jesse Underwood and how wonderful he is. And he had this huge family of 14 children. But nobody ever talked much about where Jesse came from. So this year, I was going through some of my Grandma Maggie's things and decided I'd just poke around on the internet and see if I could find Jesse's ancestors. And nobody ever talks about him much because he's hard to find with all these aliases. Someone in our family named Mary Howenstein wrote a book before she died called Patriots, Their Footsteps Erased, because she wanted people to keep looking for this man.
Okay. He was a mystery.
Yes, the big mystery. So I started looking for him and really wasn't too satisfied with what I found. A lot didn't make sense. The dates didn't add up. Things just weren't quite right. And I was looking through some forums, some genealogy forums, and found a thread from 2005 where someone gave their first and last name in the city they lived in. So I looked them up in White Pages and gave them a call, and sure enough, I'm related. We had a great conversation, and she said to me, you need to look for William Wedgbar on the Patriots of Color database.
Really?
Well, that was astounding to me. That thought had never occurred to me. So we hung up the phone. I went to the Patriots of Color database, and there he was.
And he had been a revolutionary soldier, an African-American revolutionary soldier.
Yes, he was. And a very important one. He was in a lot of great periods of the war, or important. I guess, you know, great isn't what you would call a battle, but he was under the command of Baron Steuben.
Right.
Colonel Posey, Major Finley. He was also at the Siege of Yorktown, where Lord Cornwall surrendered.
Yes.
So this man witnessed great moments in history.
Yes. The time, basically, the country, the tide of the war turned with that. Unbelievable. And what was his rank? Was he a private, or was he a non-commissioned officer? What was his story?
He was a private.
Okay.
And after the war, he received a land grant there. We can trace him back to this. He was given 200 acres in Virginia for his war service.
Wow. What a great story. And how many years had people been looking for him?
Well, Mary Howenstein had been looking for him for over 20 years. She's been, I can't remember how long she's been gone, but I think since the people started being interested in the history of Jesse Underwood in my family, they've been looking for him. I hope there are other people out there that have been looking for him a long time and have some information. So now that we can include African-American families as descendants
yes.
of Jesse Underwood, we might really find out some details and learn to understand him. What I'd really like to know, Fisher,
yes.
is where William Wedgbar Underwood came from. I'd like to know something about his parents.
His background. Well, and that's always challenging back in that era for anybody to find.
Right.
Just depends on what the records are for those areas. But in the South, always tough. A lot of courthouses burned during the Civil War, and a lot of records lost. But Robbie, wow, what a breakthrough, what a find, and how interesting. And you got to feel pretty good about yourself because so many people have tried for so long to find this guy.
I do. I just wish I'd looked earlier. I guess the timing wasn't right, but I might not have found all these clues had I looked earlier.
You know, often seems like the timing does have to be right for the right person to come along or the right database to suddenly be available, you know, all these things. I think there's a lot of stuff that it took me years and years and years to find that if I just waited till now, it wouldn't have taken any time at all, although I'm really glad for the time I spent doing those things. But I don't think that rule is any different for now, that things will come along down the line that'll just open doors that we never imagined.
They do. And the hunt is exciting, especially when you get something big at the end of it.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, I should mention, by the way, you talked about the newspapers earlier. We have listed some of these free sites for digitized newspapers on our website, extremejeans.com, so people can check those out. And, of course, anytime anybody has a suggestion for a free site that should be mentioned, just drop it to me at fisher@extremejeans.com, and we'll get it up there. So, Robbie, thanks so much for calling in on the Find Line and sharing this with us. That's great news, and we share your joy.
Thank you, Fisher.
So there you go. If you found that interesting, and I know you did, you should know that others will find your stories pretty fascinating, too. So call us and share them at 1-2-3-4-5-6-GENES, toll free. And coming up, our preservation authority, Tom Perry, is back from TMCPlace.com. Tom's got answers to your questions about digitizing home movies and color correction and dealing with some issues concerning home video conversion. That's next in 3 minutes on Extreme Jeans Family History Radio and ExtremeJeans.com.
Welcome back to Extreme Jeans Family History Radio, ExtremeJeans.com. Fisher here, your radio root sleuth with Tom Perry. He is our preservation authority from TMCPlace.com. How are you, Tom?
Doing really good.
Good to see you again. And we have another question, this one from Dublin, Indiana, from Kesey Michaels. She says, hi, Tom. I saw on your site an area dealing with color correction for film transfer. My local people offer it, too. How do I know if I need it, and is it expensive?
No, not expensive at all, and it's very easy to understand if you need this. The best way to find out if you need it is go to our website and click on Order 24/7 Online Now, or just go to shop.tmcplace.com. You'll see a pull-down menu that will say Film Transfers, and then below that you'll see one that says, you know, watch a film transfer color correction. If you click on the color correction, it will actually show you a YouTube video with a split screen showing color correction and the before and after shot. Generally, what happens to old film, especially if it wasn't developed properly, is it turns either red or blue. And if it turns red, basically the blue dye has gone out of it. If it turns blue, the red dye has gone out of it.
What happened to cause that?
A lot of times in the old days, people tried to save money when they had their film transfers done. And they didn't send it to Kodak because they could save a little bit of money by going to Ma and Pa down the street. And Ma and Pa down the street were told by Kodak, after you do so many feet of film, throw your chemicals away and start over again. But they would keep going, and they say, this film still looks good. There's nothing wrong. I don't have to do what Kodak says. They're trying to get more money from me. However, little did they know, 20 years down the road, that film would lose the color because it hadn't been fixed right. And so it usually turns red.
Wow. And you're able to restore this?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've even bought, or my father, I was too young, when we went to Disneyland, bought some film at the store that had a Disney canned show on it. And we've got some of those that have even turned red, and they were professionally done. So what we do is when we do the color correction, we go in and add the blue dye back into it. So then the greens are green, the grasses look like real grass, the skies are blue. It's just really amazing.
But you're not dealing with real dye. You're actually doing it digitally, right?
Exactly. We're taking it and we're doing an overlay. We're doing it in layers in like Final Cut Pro. And so when we layer that on, it makes it look beautiful. And so you can go to our website and actually see a split screen of the before and after. And it's quite significant, the change it made.
It's very impressive. In fact, you did those for me. And I couldn't believe when it came back. It's like, wow, sky is blue, grass is green, my face looks like my face. When I was six.
Isn't a good thing, yeah. Back when you were cute, right?
Back when I was cute.
But it's true. It's amazing, and it usually only runs about $60 or less. And sometimes if
for how much? For how long?
For the whole job.
Oh, for the whole job.
Yeah, whether you bring in a 50-foot roll or you bring in 10,000 feet, it's just a flat price on it. And if you don't know for sure, you can put in the little notes where you can give us some notes of what you want. You can put, hey, if it needs color correction, go ahead and do it. And if you know it needs it, just check it off and don't deal with it. If you're not sure, just put, if this needs color correction, go ahead and do it. And then when we're going through and cleaning and lubing your film, we'll be able to see, oh, some of this has really gone red. Oh, some of this has really gone blue. So then we'll go ahead and do the color correction if you ask to. If you don't check it and you don't ask us to check for you, then we won't do it. But it's only about $50-$60, so it's really a good deal.
Well, actually, what's the point of getting your films digitized if they're all going to be blue and red? You got to do it.
Exactly. And I shake my head every day because there's some people that just, they don't see the value of it. And like I've talked on episodes before, you go and spend $500 on a big LED, big screen, give it to your kids or something, they'll love it. 5 years later, they'll have no idea what you gave them for that Christmas season. You give them the film transfers and videotape saved to DVD, they'll have it for your grandkids, your great-grandkids. And one thing that we offer now also is we can actually put this film as a digital file on a hard drive so you can go back and narrate it and say, hey, this is, you know, Grandma, this is Aunt Yoon. She was a friend of ours. She used to come by all the time. She wasn't really our aunt. This is who she is. And when we're all gone and buried, our great-great-grandchildren will be able to hear our voice describing who these other people are in the scene instead of just some people in the scene that they have no clue who they are.
All right. Great stuff. Got another question here, Tom, from Steve Andrus in Lincoln, Nebraska. He said, Tom, doing a video conversion at home, is it okay to take two 2-hour tapes and put them on a 4-hour DVD, or should they be separate? I didn't even know there were 4-hour DVDs.
Okay. The interesting thing about DVDs are they're 4.7 gigabytes, and depending on what kind of recorder you have, you can set them to record 1 hour, which is the best quality, 2 hour, 4 hour. We even have a machine that can record up to 12 hours on a standard DVD.
So you would lose quality, I guess, then, the more you want to put on there.
Not only so much with the quality. The thing is, the disc is a fixed size, so the more stuff you put on there, the more cramped it's going to be. So if you scratch your disc or get a little pit in it, even though 9 out of 10 times we can resurface a disc, make them like new, there's so much stuff in there, there's so much more option for problems. So if you have two-hour VHS tapes or Video 8 or whatever you're transferring to your DVD, keep them that way. Don't put two-hours together onto 4 hour. Leave them as two. If you have one that's already 4 hours, your quality is diminished so much anyway. If you want to go ahead and do it on a 4 hour disc versus two-hours, you can. If it's something that's really, really priceless, I would always go the best quality possible. You know, go on the 1 hour, the 2 hour, even if you have to split your tape into multiple tapes. Your quality's already gone down, so it's not going to make a big difference. But if something's really, really important, do that. And also make sure you use good discs. I would either go online, you can buy them from us, or you can go on any website that sells Taiyo Yuden discs. Those are the best discs out there, in my opinion. I have never, ever had one come back.
Spell those.
T-A-I-Y-O-Y-U-D-E-N, I believe. But it's Taiyo Yuden. If you forget, go to my website. There's a page with downloads, and it has our pricing on duplicating, and it'll actually have the name of the disc that we use, which is Taiyo Yuden. So you can buy them online. Most places, the big box stores don't sell them because Taiyo Yuden that won't sell them to places like that. It's a professional disc, so you have to buy them online. A lot of places sell them online. We sell them online also in our different stores. But make sure you use a good Taiyo Yuden disc. You're talking about pennies difference, like maybe 50 cents for a disc versus 30 cents for a good quality disc. So you want to get a good quality disc. We have lifetime warranties we put on our Taiyo Yudens. And in all these years, I have never had a Taiyo Yuden come back. I've had problems with TDK, iMation. They make good quality stuff. However, I have never had a problem with the Taiyo Yuden disc. So that's what I would use.
That's quite an endorsement, Tom. You said something about repairing a disc. How do you repair a disc?
Okay, the first thing you do is don't use toothpaste. Just because it says so on the internet does not mean it's true.
Right.
You want to be really, really careful. I really suggest you do it. Go to some place that does it professionally. A lot of places like GameStops will actually either do it for you or they will know somebody that does it that they can send you to. Sometimes even the local libraries will have a disc resurfacing machine, and sometimes they'll let the public drop off their disc and use it. There'll be a charge. It's usually not that expensive. But what it actually does, it's like a piece of fine furniture. It actually sands it down and then rebuffs it, so it takes out the grooves. I've had some stuff come in that had pretty deep marks in them, like a navigational disc, which are like $350, and we were able to resurface it. So if you have discs, if you can't find someplace, just come into our store or go to shop.tmcplace.com and box them up, ship them to us, and we'll resurface them and send them back to you just like new.
Thanks, Tom. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
And that wraps up our show for this week. Thanks to Karen Zock, coordinator for the Montgomery County and Fountain County, Indiana Gen websites, for explaining Gen Webs and what you can find on them. Thanks also to Robbie from Michigan. Stories like hers are what keeps us going when the searching gets tough. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and be sure to sign up for our Extreme Jeans newsletter on our website, extremejeans.com. That's how we'll let you know when our new Extreme Jeans free app will be ready, hopefully in the next 3 weeks or so. Next week, are you descended from royalty and why does it matter? We'll be talking to nationally renowned researcher Gary Boyd Roberts about gateway ancestors, those ancestors with proven lines back to royalty. Talk to you then. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family. This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org.